Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Kate Faulkner.
Hello, happy Friday. Hope you're okay. Thank you for downloading today's podcast on September 27th. Coming up today, we'll hear from a Canterbury woman living with MS who's taking on an amazing physical challenge to raise money for a Kent treatment centre. We'll also hear from the current Jill's boss as he prepares to welcome his predecessor to Priestfield. But first, taking a look at our top story today. Investigators are trying to piece together what happened in the moments leading up to a fatal collision on the M25. Nicola has been following this story for the Kent Online podcast. She's got more details for us.
Well, Kate, emergency crews were called to the clockwise carriageway of the M25 between Junction 5, which is for the A21 and M26, and the Clackett Lane services just before 12:30 yesterday afternoon. Now, the crash involved a blue Suzuki motorcycle, a silver Toyota Corolla, and a lorry which had a white cab and a blue curtain-sided trailer with yellow sign writing. The motorcyclist, a man in his 40s, died at the scene, and his family have been informed. Officers from Kent Police's Serious Collision Investigation Unit are now appealing to anyone with information to contact them. They've also released an image of the lorry which left the scene as they continue to establish the full circumstances. Now, detectives say the driver may not have been aware of the severity of the collision and they're urging them to come forward. They also want to speak to anyone with dashcam footage.
Kent Online News.
An inquest into the death of a young woman whose body was found in undergrowth on Folkestone seafront has heard she died of cocaine toxicity. 24-year-old Leah Daly was reported missing in May this year but was found at the Warren 12 days later, close to where she'd last been seen. Cocaine toxicity can occur within minutes to hours of excessive cocaine use. Symptoms include rapid heart rate, high blood pressure, hypothermia, excessive sweating and agitation. Police have confirmed her death is not being treated as suspicious. A man who tried to smuggle two Vietnamese people into Kent in the boot of his car has been jailed. The 14-year-old girl and 20-year-old woman were discovered by Border Force at the Eurotunnel entrance in France in April last year. A 39-year-old from Birmingham has been sentenced to 3 years following a hearing at Canterbury Crown Court. A woman who followed a pensioner home from a supermarket and robbed her outside her home in Swanley has been jailed. Daniela Nicolai tricked the victim into giving away her address, then snatched a necklace while she was unloading bags from her car. The 31-year-old from Edmonton in North London has been locked up for 2 years and 8 months. A coroner has found the deaths of a husband and wife in their home in Tunbridge Wells was a murder-suicide. Police were called to Montgomery Road in February and found the couple in their first floor bathroom. Investigators now believe 63-year-old Richard Parks strangled, stabbed and hit his wife, 53-year-old Surachani Parks, with a hammer before taking his own life. They're satisfied no third parties were involved.
Kent Online News.
A new image has been released in the hopes of identifying a man found dead in a Margate hotel almost 30 years ago. He'd checked into a guest house in September 1996 and was discovered in the room a few days later. A forensic artist has created a picture of what he would have looked like. You can see it at Kent Online. Shop owners in Gravesend have revealed how they're determined to fight back against a rise in shoplifting offences. They recorded more than 1,400 incidents in the 12 months to March 2023 and 1,300 in the last financial year. Now they're kitted out with radios and an app to share info on suspects and warn fellow traders. It's an initiative called G-Safe. Gabriel Morris spoke to Tracy Saville, who runs a boutique.
The town used to be like amazing. You know, it used to be like you dress up, you come down on a Saturday, it was buzzing, and it's just become emptier. I don't know whether it's because of the undesirables that are now blatantly like setting up camp. I know up by Tesco's, they sort of like cause a lot of trouble up there, etc. We're quite lucky here in the high street. We don't get too much trouble, to be fair. It's a really nice area, but we did have some undesirables that were sort of like drinking and maybe a little bit of drug taking, which put people off coming in the shop. They decided to sort of like set up camp outside. So not a good look. Obviously, we've got some nice items in here. We've got some great customers. So not good. But hopefully, well, they have moved on. And also the G-Safe radio keeps us really kind of like in touch. That's an amazing thing because we can see what's going on in town and who's about, etc. And yeah, so all good.
How often does that go off?
I tend to turn it down a little bit. Sometimes it is quite a lot. Obviously, and I've got customers and I need to chat with them, and they don't want to hear about, you know, who's about and stuff like that. Don't want to put them off. So yeah, there's always sort of like some chat go on, but obviously we've also got an app on our phone, which is great. So we can log into that and just familiarise ourselves with like who's about and what they're up to and it, etc. But luckily here at Toxic Angel, we have only had a couple of thefts that we know of in the last couple of years. It's quite a small shop, which is great, you know, and we have got like the cameras as well. So we are happy to name and shame and, you know, sort of like straight on the G-Safe radio as well. So, yeah, it's good. I feel quite safe in here. I don't feel, you know, like intimidated or anything.
Sophie Jordan is a G-Safe coordinator.
The shops are unfortunately having to cut back on having staff on the shop floor. So there's less of a deterrent. It seems quite easy. And also the criminal justice system, there's no actual consequence either for people who are committing shopliftings.
No Police and Crime Commissioner, Kent Police just started the Retail Crime Board. Is that going to make any difference?
Yes, it absolutely will, because it's bringing together the right people in the room to work together. I do sit on that Retail Crime Board, and we've had the first meeting, and it was really good to get the right people in the room to start these conversations to make a difference.
And, I mean, how are we going to bring the numbers down? What needs to be done? What does Kent Police need to do? What do G-Safe need to do? What does the community need to do to drive this number down in shoplifting offences?
It's very difficult because there are so many wider societal problems, but I think by working together and making sure that the police have the correct information, certainly for shops, submitting CCTV promptly, helping the police to do everything that they can to bring a successful prosecution about, and also everybody working together, join your local business crime reduction partnership, be engaging, share that information, look at what the current threats are, and just be more alert in your area.
Very quickly, one last question. I mean, why do you think some shops are reluctant to join G-Safe, report evidence to Kent Police? I know you're saying some of the smaller, newer shops have that reluctancy.
It's sometimes perception as well. They might think they have enough things to do already rather than get involved, but it is really beneficial if they could join on a trial even and just see what is available and how it can help. I think we'd certainly win a lot of people over, and people also look at cost as well. But with the cost of G-Safe for a big company, it's about £480 a year. What single security measure can you spend £450 on in a year that's going to deliver more benefit than joining a local business crime reduction partnership?
Gabriel also spoke to Councillor Jordan Mead from KCC. They were joined by Kent Online reporter Simon Finlay.
Our businesses are the eyes and ears on the grounds. They're the ones working in these challenging environments. We need to be there and we need to listen and then we need to act. For too long, our businesses have been a lone voice in this area, and the councils, both the county council through my role and also the borough council here, need to play a better coordinating role in getting all of the partnership agencies around the table so that we can solve some of these societal issues.
Is there a willingness to do that?
Yes, I think there is definitely the willingness, and I think today we've seen the strength of the business community turn out in force for this AGM, and that in itself should be a sign that there is a willingness, certainly from the business community and volunteer partnership agencies, to come round. Now the councils need to step up and play a better role in supporting them.
Can the councils afford that?
Well, I think there are different ways of working, aren't there? So I'm seeing what I can do through my member grants. I know that the businesses are looking at ways that they can restructure to provide additional resources to security staff. But also, how can we support our voluntary sector more?
Brilliant, Simon. Is there anything you would want
to
say?
Yeah, I just want to ask Jordan Mead, can you just tell us the effect that shoplifting, violence and antisocial behaviour has on the local business community?
It's absolutely devastating for our business community in Gravesend. It's stopping people coming into the town centre, which is impacting upon the viability of those businesses to survive. And particularly as we now approach the winter period in Gravesend, where we see a reduction in footfall to our town centre, it's all the more reasons that councils need to step up and support those on the front line.
Earlier this month, Kent's Crime Commissioner held the first Retail Crime Board to tackle the issue. A woman has paid tribute to her dad, who'd lived in Faversham all his life after he lost his battle with cancer. Brian Carlos was 69. The former mechanic and grandfather of four was diagnosed with a form of blood cancer in 2022. His daughter Louise revealed the last words he spoke to her were, "I love you," and she plans to have him buried in the town.
Kent Online News.
A Canterbury woman living with MS is on a mission to raise money for a centre in Kent where she's been receiving treatment. After receiving her diagnosis, Anne-Marie Bundock says access to the Kent MS Therapy Centre helped her regain strength and improve her fitness. She's now taking on the Lake District 10 Peak Challenge. I've been speaking to Anne-Marie about why keeping fit is so important.
Since being diagnosed, my activity levels have just gone all out. I've tried to increase my strength and my stamina and everything to try and help me, and I find it really does, yeah.
I did read that you sort of determined to keep up the physical activity and make yourself as physically fit as you can. How does that help you combat MS?
Yeah, so over the years I've suffered with weakness in my right arm and my right leg, which should be my dominant side, but it no longer really is. A few years ago, I started doing a lot of strength training, lifting weights and things like that. And it's really helped strengthen that side of my body and my whole body, really. During the COVID years, 2020, that's when I really, really got into running because I had no time work because I was on furlough. So I was able to push myself and I started running decent 5Ks. I then challenged myself to run a 10K. And then I challenged myself to run a half marathon and, yeah, did that. Last year I ran 2 half marathons, raised money for charity, which were really good fun.
And how about mentally? What does the physical activity do for your mental health?
So yeah, it helps. It does an amazing thing. So yeah, mentally, I feel more focused. Gives me something to do, something to think about. It gives me time to think, process the day's thoughts and all that kind of thing. Yeah.
Now, what can you tell me about the latest challenge that you're undertaking to raise money?
So I'll be doing the 10 Peak Challenge up at the Lake District. It's going to be good fun, but very, very challenging, especially since I've never climbed a mountain before. So to do a whole 10 peaks is going to be quite something. And I'm very looking forward to it. And I'm doing it with a very good friend of mine, Kim.
How much money are you aiming for? Do you have a goal in mind?
So we were aiming first of all for 600, which I'm pretty sure we've done that now. So we're gonna up our total and try and aim a bit more. Yeah, so see how much we can do. It'd be really good.
She's taking on the challenge this Saturday in the hopes of raising more than £5,000.
Kent Online News.
A Maidstone man says Southern Water are doing nothing about raw sewage that runs across his drive every time there's heavy rain. The waste is coming from a domestic drain outside the property in Old Tovel Road. He's been making complaints to the water company since 2019. Mick Goodrich has been telling the podcast just how bad the problem can be.
We moved into the property in 2019. Not long after that, we started getting problems with drainage overflowing into our drive. Got in touch with Southern Water. Initially, they did decide to come out and do something, but the things that they've done have not alleviated the problem. It's ongoing, and I tried to explain to them that it's a combined system which takes the rainwater and the sewage, and they're adamant that it's not, even though their engineer has been out and seen it. The problem is ongoing, and it doesn't matter what I do, I can't get a resolution from Southern Water, and we keep trying and nothing happens. The result of this problem is the fact that every time we get torrential downpours, which happened quite a lot lately, we end up with other people's sewage all down our drives, solids. They come out and clear it up reasonably quickly, but that's about as far as it goes. Gets pushed up to an escalation unit, and then it stops.
Southern Water say they are willing to install slow-release water butts to help ease the problem as soon as the owner gives his consent. It comes as a no-swim warning remains in force in the sea at Dover after a sewage release. Tests show water quality at Shakespeare Beach is still below the required standard. The Port of Dover say they're working with the Environment Agency and Southern Water to make sure the cause of the leak is dealt with. Two pubs in One Kent Village near Faversham could both close before the end of the year. Bosses at both the White Horse and the Queen's Head in Boughton-under-Blean say it's not financially viable to stay open. The two sites are on the same street, just a stone's throw away from each other. It's not yet clear what will happen to them. A petition has been launched to save a much-loved church in Folkestone. St Joseph's in Cheriton closed in 2023 due to a broken boiler and has remained shut ever since. The Archdiocese of Southwark has announced plans to sell off the site despite previously promising it would reopen. The congregation say they feel like it's been stolen from them and are doing whatever they can to stop it going on the market.
Kent Online News.
The Duchess of Edinburgh has been in Kent to open a new winery. Sophie visited Domain Evremond, which was founded 10 years ago. They're working with Tattinger. It's the first time a major champagne house has invested in land in the UK. Patrick McGrath is the founder.
My company represents Champagne Tattinger in the UK, so we work very closely together. And probably in the last 12 years ago, I started tasting some English sparkling wines with Pierre Manuel and his daughter Vitaly and son Clovis, and we suddenly thought, well, actually, why don't we do a project together? They love Kent, they love England. There's a very strong bond between the two countries. Pierre Manuel's father was responsible for twinning Reims and Canterbury as twin cities when he was mayor of Reims. So we thought, well, let's look at the project. So we started looking around for Kent. Focus was on Kent because it's drier, it's warmer, it's sunny, it's the sunniest county, it's where the best fruit is grown in the UK, and now we regard it as the wine garden of England. So we bought some land here in just outside Chilham, working with a local farmer, Mark Gascaigne, on his land. We bought some land from him. He helps now work, looks after the vines with Christelle from Tattinger. And we bought the land in 2015. We planted the first vines in 2017, 20 hectares. We now have 60 hectares, so nearly 150 acres of vines spread in the valley you can see behind me.
And how does it feel? I mean, could you tell me the story of when you found out that there was going to be a royal visit for this?
Yeah, I mean, I'm fortunate I have a personal connection with Her Royal Highness. She's very close to English sparkling wines. And she grew up in Kent, which is fantastic. And therefore, she was delighted to come and help support us, but also help the industry, the viticultural industry in Kent. And I think her presence today is a real endorsement of the exciting future for winemaking in Kent.
And could you talk to me a bit about that future? I know Kent's very known for winemaking. Yeah, we have some wine masters in Kent.
Yes, yeah.
So how do you think that this new facility is going to add to that?
I think it will draw the attention to it. We have a group of vineyards also working together in Kent under the umbrella of the Wine Garden of England, promoting tourism. Kent, that we have very fast communication, whether it's on the high speed HS1, whether we're down from London, promoting tourism in Kent. And I really believe that Kent will be seen as the go-to destination if you want to taste high quality sparkling wine, still wine, but also visit some amazing wineries, be educated, walk around the vineyards, have a picnic in the vineyards. It's going to be a fantastic, you know, new addition to the very strong tourist offering that Kent offers.
The first wine will be released next spring. Jessica Hines has received an honorary doctorate from Canterbury Christchurch Uni. The royal family and Paddington star has been recognised for her acting career and promoting drama and arts in schools. Kent cricketer Tammy Beaumont was also recognised. And conservationists are celebrating as a wild chick of a rare bird species has been born in Kent for the first time. A total of 19 red-billed choughs have now been released as part of efforts to restore numbers after a 200-year absence. The first nest was discovered at Dover Castle in May. Laura Gardner is the head of conservation at Wildwood Trust.
I'm delighted to say that we've had the most amazing year with our red-billed chough reintroduction into Kent. We have seen the species return after an absence of 200 years. To see the species not only survive, but actually thrive. This species reintroduction has driven all sorts of conversations with landowners, closely linked to habitat restoration and looking at improving biodiversity across all of the farmland and landowners as well. The Kent reintroduction is the first in a series of reintroductions to restore the species across the south coast of England. What we have achieved to date is so exciting. We've got such expertise on the team, and that's really paying dividends. It's brilliant. And I'm just, if ever you get the chance to go to Dover and see the birds, we've got 19 flying over the White Cliffs at the moment, and it's just incredible. 200-year absence and they're back.
There's hope numbers will continue to grow. Liz Corrie is the Chough Release Supervisor at Wildwood.
It is really early on for this project because these birds are still sort of like teenage years really for them. So it was great that they actually got to the stage of having a chick. Moving forward, we're hoping that next year, the fact we've got more males in the group, the birds will be slightly older, we'll have more pairs to monitor, more work for us, and we'll no doubt be asking for help from the public to be keeping an eye out on and looking for those birds. But it means that those numbers will just keep on increasing, which is great. So we have another 3 or so years of looking at releasing the birds that we've captive reared, but hopefully we'll be able to stop at that point because the birds in the wild will be doing their own thing and taking over, which is really great.
Kent Online News.
Football now, and it's going to be a cracker of a game at Priestfield this weekend. Second place Gillingham take on top of the table Barrow in League Two. The visitors are managed by Stephen Clements, the man the Gills sacked in the summer. Current boss Mark Bonner has been chatting to the club's media team ahead of the game.
Really looking forward to the game. I thought last weekend was a really good test, as we'd mentioned going into it, and we played ever so well, so we were delighted with the outcome of that. And now we start a 3-game week, which is important, 2 games at home, against another team that are flying and going really well. So I think we've played a lot of teams that are in good form, and they've been a tough game for us, and we've been a tough game for them, and I expect this weekend to be no different. So looking forward to getting back here. Can feel that there's an excitement about the game, and I think there'll be a big crowd for the game, which is good. And the players, certainly some that have been rested this week and go into the game a little bit fresher, hopefully. Hopefully we get the benefit of that at the weekend.
As you say, a bumper crowd is expected here at Priestfield. What kind of game are you expecting?
Well, they've started ever so well, and they've been defensive records equally good, same as ours. So I think it will be a game where they'll make it difficult for us to create chances. They've got some very good attacking players in wide areas. Fullbacks get forward and join attacks well. They've got some threats throughout the team, as you'd expect. We know that they're top scorers from set plays at the moment in the league, so that's another area where they're strong. And they'll make it hard for us. And you can never predict exactly what the game looks like, which is why I think we have to try to prepare and develop a bit of flexibility in the way we play, so that in any given day, whilst we might have an idea of what the game looks like, whatever twists and turns it takes, we can cope. So we'll need a bit of flexibility in the way we go about our work, whether that's players and personnel throughout the game with substitutions, or just the way in which we play. But we want to be a team that gets right on top of the game early and tries to have a dominant day where we can. But equally, we're playing against a team that like the ball as well. So it should make for a really good game.
And here's our Gills reporter, Luke Cordell.
It's set up to be a bit of a cracker, really. Top versus second. The leaders are managed by former Gillingham boss Stephen Clements, who was sacked following a disappointing end to the last season. Clements had hoped to get a summer at Gillingham to put his own team together for a challenge, but the board decided to make a change and hand Mark Bonner the opportunity. And while Bonner has made a great start, Clements has enjoyed an even better first 2 months, having taken charge of Barrow, seen as a bit of an unfashionable team at this level. Many thought he might struggle, but some shrewd signings have led them to the top of League Two. And in the week, they even had a League Cup game at Chelsea. They lost the game 5-0, but nobody was expecting them to come away with anything but happy memories of going to a big club and a bit of a day out for them. Both have had similar records in the league. Barrow sitting top, courtesy of scoring one extra goal than the Gills in their opening 7 games. There's been mutual respect shown by both managers leading up to this one. And in fact, Mark Bonner and Stephen Clements were both together at pre-season for a manager's meeting where they were joined for lunch by Neil Harris, the manager in charge of the Gills before they were. So there's definitely a lot of respect between managers, and there is hopefully going to be some respect shown towards Clements from the crowd as well. Both sides are in good form, yep. The Gills have a 100% record at home, so they'll be looking to keep that run going. They won 3-0 last time at Priestfield against Tranmere. And Even though they finished the last two home games with 10 men, with send-ins off, they still managed to get the wins and get clean sheets as well. Last weekend, Gillingham won at Notts County. It was another top versus second game that afternoon. Notts were top. Gillingham won 1-0. But Barrow went to the top of the table courtesy of their own win. They've only lost once this season against Carlisle. So it's two teams with very similar records going against each other. Very little in it. See how much is in it when they play each other on Saturday.
Briefly to cricket, Kent will be hoping for some play on day two of their final championship game of the season. No action was possible yesterday because of rain in Durham. Kent have already been relegated from Division 1. That's all from us today and for the week. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget you can follow us on Facebook, X, Instagram, TikTok and Threads. You can also get the details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via The Briefing. To sign up, just head to kentonline.co.uk. And while you're on the website, why not check out the latest review from The Secret Drinker?
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.